Welcome to Kitchen Window, NPR's food podcast. I'm Bonnie Wolf. I'm sure there are people who don't like fresh sweet corn. I've never met them. Food writer Susan Russo is a corn lover and has lots to say on the subject. Corn also plays a role in a new kind of Texas cooking, as we'll see. So let's dig in. Susan Russo is a food writer in San Diego. She publishes stories, recipes, and photos on her cooking blog, Food Blogger. She has written a piece for Kitchen Window Online about everyone's favorite summer subject, corn. She joins me today. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Bonnie.
Why does everybody love corn so much?
I think because it's just such a fun food to eat. When you think about it, it's one of the few foods that is expected to be eaten with your hands. You can just slather it with butter and salt, or you can get a little fancy and sprinkle some lime juice on it, or you could sprinkle some cheese on it, and it goes with everything. It's just such a laid-back food. I think it's like Americans, you know? We like to have fun. We like to be laid back. It's a barbecue and a cookout kind of food, and it's just something that everybody loves.
There does seem to be an affinity with lime. Do you have any idea why?
Well, I think it's mostly from Mexico. That's where we get the influence from, because lime and lemon as well actually helps to bring out the corn flavor much more than even just, say, butter does. Hmm. There's something about the acidity that interacts with the sugars in the corn and makes the corn have more of that intense corn flavor and kind of enhance the sweetness.
What do you do with corn and lime?
Sometimes I just make a plain ear of corn. I boil it or steam it or grill it and just literally just sprinkle some lime and a little bit of salt on it and maybe a little bit of cayenne pepper. Also, one of my favorite dishes, which I talk about in the piece, and I actually share the recipe in the online piece, is for Mexican grilled corn, which is absolutely addictive. You just grill the corn, and then you slather it with this lime-spiked mayonnaise sauce, and then you roll it in crumbly Mexican cotija añejo cheese.
Which is?
It's a crumbly, salty cheese that's mildly aged, and it can be found in regular supermarkets or Mexican markets. It's pretty easy to find, actually. It just has a wonderful flavor. And when you roll the corn in it, all these little knobby pieces of cheese stick to the hot corn.
And
you sprinkle it with lime and chili powder or cayenne pepper and some fresh cilantro, and it is just a slice of heaven, I'm telling you.
Sounds like it. Not to go back to the very beginning, but corn is also such an American food, and I think we think that too because they didn't have corn in Europe, and the colonists came here and the Native Americans introduced them to corn.
Yeah. When the colonists came to America, the Native Americans had already been growing and using corn for many, many years prior to that. So when they came, the colonists, specifically Christopher Columbus, is believed to be the first colonist and his men to actually see the Indians growing corn. And they were, of course, fascinated. So they would talk to the Native Americans to learn how to grow this. And then, of course, out of necessity, they had to learn to grow it themselves, because when their own food supplies would run out, such as wheat or rice, they would have to rely on corn. So really what happened was there was this cultural exchange between the colonists and the Native Americans, and a lot of foods were born from this time.
What kind of foods?
Cornbread, you know, things like Johnny cakes or hoe cakes, grits and hominy, because what happened was the colonists would see the Indians making these dishes, and the Indians used a lot of stone-ground corn because it was something that they could make and then they could use throughout the cold winter months when they weren't able to grow fresh produce. So they would use this ground corn, and they would often make a mash out of it, and then they would bake it over an open fire. And so all these different names of different foods emerged, such as Johnny cakes or ash cakes or hoe cakes, and they were all basically referring to the same thing. And the colonists saw this, and they tried to mimic it, and they also incorporated their own European techniques. And that's how we ended up getting, you know, basic American staples like cornbread and corn muffins and corn pudding.
Corn became a very important part of the diet And
oh, absolutely, because it was a staple for Native American diets, and then it became a staple when Columbus went back to Europe. He took corn with him, and within one or two generations, it basically spread throughout all of Europe and then quickly ended up spreading throughout the world.
Yeah.
And so it was something that was easy to grow in a lot of different climates. It was pretty inexpensive, and it was something that you could use throughout the winter months when you couldn't grow other things. So it was something that people all over the world found, you know, really desirable, and that's why today, in fact, corn is the third leading crop in the world.
Is that right? How, and corn has changed a great deal with hybridization and crossbreeding, and what have we gained by all of this?
Well, what we've gained is a much sweeter ear of corn, a more robust corn that could sustain harsher weather, and corn that could yield a much larger crop. What we've lost in that process, though, is some of that true corn flavor. It's hard to describe, but we all know it when we taste it. And a lot of people feel that the corn that we eat today, which is pretty much all of the corn we eat today, is from a variety called super sweet corn. And what that is it's, like the name implies, a super sweet tasting corn because it has very high sugar content, almost three times as much as a traditional ear of corn would have had. So you have that sweet flavor, but the drawback is that it's a much less creamy corn. It has crunchier kernels and less of that corn milk that makes corn creamy. And a lot of people feel that it has a lack of true corn flavor.
We have heirloom tomatoes and antique apples. Are they starting to grow old kinds of corns that are sweeter?
Yes, they absolutely are. In fact, a lot of people are saying that's going to be the next trend, that there's going to be, you know, kind of a backlash against this super sweet corn and to try to get back to the old-fashioned corn flavor that we used to have.
How do you pick a good ear of corn?
Well, the first thing you should actually look for is make sure that the corn hasn't been sitting out in the sun all day, because when corn is exposed to high heat, it breaks down the sugars. So once you find some corn, hold it in your hand and make sure it feels heavy for its size. And the husk should be a nice bright green, and it should be taut. It shouldn't be shriveled, and it shouldn't have any mold spots on it. And then just gently pull back the top of the husk, and what you want to look for is plump, full kernels, and you want to look for a silk that is light-colored, beige or golden-colored, and that's still dry, that isn't wet or moldy. And then once you take it home, it's best to keep it in the husk so that you retain moisture and put it in a plastic bag and then keep it in the crisper drawer of your refrigerator. And most corn today will last up to a week, but the sooner you eat the corn, the better it'll taste.
How do you freeze corn?
To freeze corn, you just remove it from the husk, you blanch it in boiling water for about 2 minutes, and then run it under cool water to cool it off, and then just cut off the kernels, place them in a single layer on a cookie sheet, and put them in the freezer. That way they don't freeze into clumps. And then once they're frozen, just put them inside of heavy-duty freezer bags, like Ziploc bags, and then you can enjoy them year-round.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was food writer Susan Russo. Corn on the cob, corn on the cob, don't you know I like corn on the cob? My heart would surely break, I like corn or fried or baked. Well, give me some corn on the cob. NPR's Linda Wertheimer visits a restaurant called Sabine in Houston, Texas. Named for the river that divides Texas and Louisiana, Sabine combines cuisine from the two states to create a new type of food. Linda speaks with Chef Aaron Guest as he cooks one of the restaurant's most popular dishes, fried catfish and corn husks with bell pepper tartar sauce.
Bill and Tom Johnson are in the restaurant business in Houston, co-owners of a place called Sabine. Bill has owned restaurants for years. Tom left a career in finance to join his brother in creating a new one. The big decision was what kind of restaurant. The Johnson brothers wanted to do something different, but something Texans would naturally like. Bill jumped in his car and hit the back road, stopping at farm stands, finding what was good and fresh and tasted like Texas.
We get everything from lady cream peas to black-eyed peas to purple hull peas to sugar snaps. We found so many things that we weren't even aware of were available, growing right in your backyard.
So just pile the food up onto the counter and say, okay,
what are we
going to
do with this? That's pretty much the way it works sometimes.
Sabine specializes in reworking those homegrown groceries. But whose idea was it to serve smoked salmon remoulade on fried green tomatoes? Or an oyster tart with collard greens that might remind you of oysters Rockefeller or not? Chef Aaron Guest is a West Texan who learned to love cooking from his mother, a scholarly-looking, rather formal young man. He is responsible for Sabine's leaps into a new kind of Texas cooking.
When I think of this cuisine, I think of plantation cuisine, the wealthier families on the plantations, and then they would hire a chef or a cook to cook for the family, and then using classical preparations and techniques, the French techniques and the background, but using the indigenous ingredients of the area to make a cuisine.
Standing over a fire built of pecan wood, Aaron Guest showed us one of Sabine's most popular dishes, a complicated way to cook catfish, starting with barbecue sauce.
We save all of our pepper scraps, onion scraps, and tomato scraps, you know, the tops and the bottoms, and we simmer that with red wine, vinegar, molasses, and brown sugar, and then puree it.
A hot, sweet sauce.
Basically.
Okay, well, let's try this then.
We have the catfish marinating in barbecue sauce. So I'm just patting it dry. And then we're going into flour, so the egg will adhere to it.
Uh-huh.
And then dust it off, and we're going into the egg wash, and then into the cornmeal. I like to press it in there so it gets a nice crispy coating. We're just going to drop into the fryer. And that should take about 3 to 4 minutes at 325 until it's nice and golden.
Catfish fillets are fried, then grilled inside a green corn husk.
I've got the husk here. I'm opening it up, and inside the inside leaves are a little bit softer and a lot easier to work with. So I'm just going to take one of those out and tear it in half to where I can tie them together, almost like tamale. And then tie them together. And then put the fish inside of the husk.
That's the whole shuck, and the end is still on it.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody just stripped back the corn and pulled the corn itself out.
Uh-huh, bandit style. So I've tied the tie around the husk, holding it together. It almost looks like an ear of corn again. I'm gonna put it on the grill.
Now it's already cooked.
Yes, it's cooked all the way through. This is just for flavoring purposes.
Well, it looks wonderful, and I'm eager to see what it tastes like. The catfish fillet takes on the sweetness and the perfume of fresh corn. For all its innovations, Sabine honors the southern tradition of lots of wonderful side dishes. The catfish comes with sage pecan pilaf, green tomato ketchup and makshuk, roasted corn and bell peppers. A sophisticated plate somewhere between down home and downtown.
The philosophy as a whole is just to keep things as close to home as we can and then just show them another ingredient in there without overwhelming them. It's just an ongoing struggle that never stops, ever, ever.
When we came back to try dinner, we found the restaurant filled and one customer, Tanil Tayar, preparing to take a flyer on seared salmon with a local goat cheese blintz, Texas Rio star grapefruit, and sweet potatoes.
My mouth started watering when I read it. The combination of the sweet and the salty from the goat cheese and the sweet from the grapefruit, kind of tantalizing when you put it with the salmon.
Would you ever have thought of putting those things together?
No, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have.
Desserts are more revisions of local favorites. Vanilla grits, banana pudding, sherbet made out of mayhaws, chocolate cake soaked with bourbon. The Johnson brothers must sign off on Chef Guest's inspirations. Food is their business, after all. But clearly, Bill and Tom think offering new takes on Texas food is also fun.
When we first opened, we got a lot of the deer in the headlights look. People were enjoying it, but they weren't really sure why. We sometimes probably push the envelope a little hard, but I'd rather push the envelope a little hard than be mundane. So,
the danger is when you do something different is that you're going to turn people off. On the other hand, if you're not doing something different, such a competitive business that you may just get buried and may never recover. So we sort of tread that fine line, and so far we've been very successful.
I was going to say, you keep the book, so I'll ask you, does it work?
It works so far.
Tom and Bill Johnson. Their restaurant is in Houston. It's called Sabine, named after the river, which is the border between East Texas and Louisiana.
That was NPR's Linda Wertheimer. Thanks for listening to today's Kitchen Window, NPR's food podcast. Go to our website, npr.org/kitchenwindow, for more food stories and recipes. Join us next time. I'm Bonnie Wolfe.